Avakal's Call by James MacLeod. Read by Emerinaya. Three long years of waiting until I finally found myself confronting Darkness, himself, and every muscle in my body was tense. "Sana, your first task is this," the old man told me, nodding towards the two small tables set apart from each other in the middle of the room. Each was set with a candle, but only one was alight. "You must light the unlit wick." I hid my sneer. Of course, he wouldn't just allow me to demonstrate my gifts without trying to temper me, to control me. That's what this ruler did best. Didn't listen for a protest or a wheeze, but held things tight until they asphyxiated. Still, I had expected as much. "Too simple," I said, turning to meet his eyes. "I can do much more." That annoyed him. I could tell as the old tyrant cleared his throat. "You are talented, they say," he admitted. "I was told that rarely do we see one with a gift like yours. Still, the tasks are what they are. I do not create them. I simply lead the called through the process. I ask them to show me their potential." "But you are the presiding light," I pointed out, "the authority in Avakal. You make the law itself. Can you not bend the rules too?" He shook his head, gesturing to the tables again. "Sana, you are here to prove yourself. Doing so, you might be chosen for my position, and if that happened, you would quickly realize that I am not the last word in any matter, by any means." "Oh, no, you don't," I thought. Trying to weasel out of the responsibility was not going to work here. "You are not in charge of things." He raised his hands before him, a gesture of helplessness, apparently, but that only made that fire inside me burn brighter. "It wasn't you, then, who stood idly as my village was dying of starvation 2 years ago." He cocked his head, and my heartbeat quickened. "It wasn't you who denied water and supplies to us when my parents were wasting away, unable to chew from the plague which swelled their tongues. When I, their only daughter, tried everything to save them. When I begged, scrounged, ran the district road all the way to the city, feet bleeding, hungry, weak, only to be turned away at locked gates, to be told, 'Go home,' by a stranger. When I was alone." There. At last that drew a wince from the old bastard. "I am truly sorry that you experience such pain, Sana." "Don't use my name," I said through my teeth. "You have not earned that right. You say you're sorry now. Sorry that you killed them, that you failed in your supposed charge to protect the people, to build a future for all." In his silence, my beating heart sounded deafening. "So, the truth of the presiding light revealed at last. You and the line before you, all liars." Taking a deep breath, this weasel put his arms behind his back and eyed me over his nose, probably trying to find an excuse, some way he could wiggle out of the accusation. "I'm afraid I have to ask you to perform the task or leave," he said. "You are but one of many called here today. Each must be given an opportunity to be assessed. Please demonstrate what you are capable of, or I must declare this assessment over." "Disgusting. But sure. Why not?" With a snort, I turned back to the candles and raised my hands. I could feel the twirling of the energy in my veins at the very gesture. Sivonic energy, they called it. A gift which was given to many, but not like it was given to me. Though it was still new, it felt familiar, and, flexing my fingers, it was as if my body knew what I was about to do, as if the movement alone was enough to stir that energy to readiness. With a subtle thought, I guided it through the air, unseeable but tangible, an extension of myself. I willed it to stretch out towards that flickering little flame, to wrap around it, to merge with it, and the energy changed then. It became an extension of the flame as well. Now we were both linked. Drawing the flame upwards, I stretched it through the still air, a ribbon of glowing destruction at my command. Then I turned towards my oppressor, the one who strangled my heart each and every day, as I'd worked the fields my father had tilled, or cooked over the fire like my mother had taught me, the one who had ignored my loneliness and pain. "Why do I have to prove to you what I am capable of?" I asked him. "What makes you the decider of my worthiness? I'm clearly stronger than you and all the others. The official who chose me said so herself." I then watched his eyes widen as I drew the cord of flame towards him. Stepping backwards, he bumped against another table, clearly set up for the next task. "That is enough, young one. Stop this," he said, trying to control me again, demeaning me, so condescending. With a casual flick of the wrist, I made the cord snap at him and retreat. And with aged legs not quick enough to allow him to dodge the strike, he stumbled and collapsed to the ground. I let a breath escape at the sight, at the helplessness of our great leader. Pathetic. Clearly he'd never come up against real potential before. Too protected in his bastion of strength, too used to wielding his might over those below whom he kept at a nice safe distance. "Stop this. Now," he said again, pained, his eyes like pools. Pools reflecting the power I now held over him. And by the sacreds, this felt good. Lowering the flame's tip towards his face, I smelled the hairs on his beard as they curled and smoked. "How many years have you and your predecessors ruled unchallenged?" I asked. "How many lives have you ruined? Well, perhaps finally someone truly worthy has come to set things right. Do you..." The old man squirmed, trying to back away from the heat. "Do you think strength or violence will give you the solutions to Avakal's problems, or that anger will make you a just ruler?" He winced as a spark peeled off the flaming cord and hit one nostril. "You think such questions will distract me from your crimes," I replied. "I know what is just and what is unjust, and I know that anyone holding power as long as you, anyone like you, deserves to be removed from that position." This. It was the chance I'd waited for, which I had thirsted for ever since my mother's dying gasp, since I'd watched the light in her bloodshot eyes go out, since my father's emaciated hand had let go of mine. Coiling the flame into a tightly wound spring, I growled, "Avakal deserves better, and it will have better." Coldness. I felt the connection die. The energy running through my arms, my hands, and my fingers left me. For a moment I thought I'd done it. But the old man was alive and eyeing me still, his eyes disbelieving, betrayed. "You'd be surprised how many think that way," a new voice said. I turned to see a woman standing between the two tables, her eyes calm, searching. "We see them every year, every time there is a call." From the dark walls, I now began to see other figures. They appeared like spectres from the gloom, as sconces on the walls burst aflame and flooded the chamber with light. 12 of them, standing there, watching me. "What is this?" I held up a hand to shield my eyes from the sudden brightness, my heart still pounding in anger, but now also in fear. "It is a call," the woman reiterated, taking a small tablet from a young boy who retreated to join the others again. "As you are aware, we have assembled those with potential to select a new member of the Presiding Light." "A new member?" I uttered, glancing at the odd smattering of people. There was no coherence. "Young, old, men and women, gifted and not gifted, wealthy and poor," the woman explained, a hand motioning around the room. "We are the Presiding Light." But my brain was spinning. There is only one presiding light, one ruler of Avakal. We reveal only one, the woman said, a public face, easier to manage. But I assure you, the leadership of Avakal is and always has been a council. Suddenly a feeling gripped my stomach, a coldness. A council. Yes. So, this made no sense. You are all murderers. A young girl stepped over to take the old man's hand and help him to his feet. Thank you, Idina, he muttered, leaning against the table to steady himself. The woman studied me still, her eyes flicking between my own. You accuse us of murder based on a pestilence which forced us to close the city gates, lest tens of thousands more die? A little unfair, wouldn't you say? It condemned us. You cut off our food supplies. The food supplies we sent out were stolen on the road by brigands we could not fend off, this woman said. They took advantage, knowing we couldn't risk escort soldiers. It would have exposed them to the plague and was not a tenable solution. A tragedy, yes, but through this tragedy many were saved. Then you threw our lives away to save your own? Save our own, the old man spoke up again. I had family who lived in your village. They fell to this sickness too. The faint, rhythmic drumming of the midday march echoed into the space for a moment. None of that is relevant now, the woman said, handing the tablet to the old man. I am afraid to inform you that this assessment is over. You are free to go, Sana. I looked around the room at the silent figures watching me, judging me, who had so quickly cast me out, and that, based on deception. No, this isn't fair, I told them. This test was unfair. I demand another attempt. Demand? The old man asked, brushing his robe down. From this robe, he then removed a small metal stamp and pressed it into the tablet before handing it back to the woman. I'm afraid you are in no position to demand anything. However, if you wish to register a grievance, you can visit the town hall any day of the span. Thank you for coming, the woman prompted again, taking the tablet back and sealing it in a small box. Such audacity. I thought Coles gave all the chance. I thought they were tests to see who is worthy of leadership of this city. And you believe you fit that description? A new voice piped up from the sidelines, a young man, almost my own age. You have shown your character today in all its colours. We have seen enough. How dare I rounded on him? You have no idea what I can do. It's not about what you can do, the woman cut me off, rubbing her forehead. Goodness, girl, do you truly not understand? Callings are not designed as demonstrations of power. They are designed to find those with values. Once again, she gestured to those two candles. Four tasks you were assigned, and you failed to complete even one. And the way you failed, I suppose it never occurred to you simply to pick one candle up and use it to light the other? No, instead, you wished to awe, to flaunt your gift, to threaten and subdue, and had we not stopped you, you seemed ready to go a step further still. Quiet mumbles of agreement met my ears while she allowed herself a breath. As Casvil said, you have shown your character. Stepping forward, I raised a finger to her face. Had you explained to me that this man was not in charge of the city, that he was not responsible for everything, perhaps things would have been different. Oh, what difference would it have made then? The woman looked past my finger, voice still calm. In your eyes, I can see it. You are desperate. Desperate to blame. For blood. You want someone to pay for your loss and hardships. It is as clear as the sunshard's reflection. Desperate to blame. For blood. Opening my mouth to reply, I found that nothing came out. It shocked me, but these were words I could not, in honesty, rebuff. But you can't take my gift, I said, looking at my hands. It's all I have now, please. Stepping forward, the woman gave a quiet sigh and offered her hands. I don't know why, but despite so many conflicting emotions swirling inside me, I took them. And the touch caused me to start, for that feeling. I was reminded of my mother's hands, warm, safe. And standing there, I felt the weight of years rising to fill me with despair. "It is far from all you have," this woman told me, her eyes determined. "Magic does not define you, Sana. Power does not define you." As she spoke, the door behind her opened and light streamed in from the hall outside. And anger, least of all. How we define ourselves, that must be through our decisions. Her look pled for understanding. "But your decisions..." "This council is not perfect. I can admit that. We all can. We make mistakes. No decision meets everyone's needs or desires. Still, we try to do the best we can, together, for that is the only way forwards, is it not?" Releasing my hands, this woman stepped aside, freeing the way to the door, and I realized what I had almost done. Breathing in through my nose, I swallowed my pain for now. It was not the time. "Your magic will return soon enough," the woman assured me, "and even your pain will fade if you let it. You are capable of healing. Manage that, and you are free to return next year to be assessed again. But I urge you to take one thing from today, Sana. Hate is poison. Be careful where you direct it, for it is more powerful than any magic." Silently, I nodded. Then, glancing at the old man with a look I hoped might express my regret, I began walking towards the door. The threshold came, but before I crossed it, I felt a lightness touch my thoughts. For the briefest moment, there was whiteness all around me. The next thing I knew, I was standing at the front gates of the great citadel again, right where I had stood that morning. "Sana," a young man called from a nearby planter, then jogged over, a nervous smile on his face. "You're done. Tell me, how was it?" "Alerting," I answered, casting a final look back through the gates. Isuran frowned. "So I suppose you, didn't get picked?"
"No."
"But you were at least polite, I hope. You looked all kinds of angry when you left this morning. I can always tell. You go all quiet and mumbly and your cheeks flush, and you never say please or thank you." I gave a grunt as he handed my pack over. "Oh, I was angry. I was very angry." "Right. So, speak on. How was he?" "Who?" I asked. "Oh, you mean he?" Odd. The word I had wanted to say was they, but for some reason it hadn't come out. "He..." I tried again. "No luck." "Yes," Isuran said uncertainly, and we began to walk. "The presiding light, how was he?" I gave a small huff of disbelief, realizing that the promise I'd given before the assessment, to keep details of the process to myself, was being enforced magically. Was that fair? Well, if it was the price to pay for almost killing someone... "Actually, not what I'd expected," I replied. "He was kind of just a normal man, old, boring, you know the type." Isuran's face flashed disappointment. "That's it? Old and boring?" I left him to ruminate on that, as I allowed my own thoughts to circle through the fading dusky light, the streets warm and quiet as stallkeeps packed up their wares and we made for the city gates. It was only after we paid the guard for watching over our wagon that I wondered. I wondered if it was time to move out of the family home I'd filled with stale, bitter memories after my parents had passed. If I could still take up that metalworking apprenticeship I'd passed up in my grief. It would be difficult. I had been alone so long. Or had I? Watching Isuran as he loaded our packs, I realized that what I had said during the assessment wasn't true. No, I wasn't alone, and I never had been. Isuran had always been by my side, just as he was right now. I just hadn't seen him. As we left Avakal, I turned to find his eyes, always so hopeful, those green eyes, still sparkling despite all the misery they had witnessed. Could mine learn to sparkle like that again? "Isu," I began, trying something new. "Thank you. For everything." He smiled. "Ah, see? When you're not angry, you're actually pleasant to be around." That brought a faint smile to my lips, too. The road ahead was long, but perhaps I would attend the call again next year. And perhaps when that time came, I'd be a different person. This was Avakal's Call, a short story by James MacLeod. Read by Emerinaya. For more short stories, visit jimzip.com. Thank you kindly for listening.